DynastyLeagueFootball.com and that DLF family of podcast. That's Tommy B. That's Dr. Caitlin Fang. I'm the SFD, and this is the Super Flex Super Show. And here we go, because we've got the good doctor back. I have no idea what we're talking about. Like, I'm on location here. I'm not even in my normal studio. I'm completely out of my element. So letting you lead this thing, Tommy, and leaning on Dr. Caitlin for support.
I appreciate you not bearing the lead. We did bring the good doctor back, and I'm so excited. I think we should just consider this a bonus episode for the Super Friends, because we don't really have much of an agenda. It's just you and I haven't really recorded in, gosh, 2 weeks now, John. Yeah. And I miss talking to you. And I had Caitlin Fang sitting next to me, and I just said, like, let's get on the mic together.
Happened to be at your house, so
here I am.
Let's do a podcast again.
Well, it was so well received last time that Caitlin was on. First, let's introduce Caitlin. Hey, Caitlin, how you doing?
Great.
Let's
great.
Not
thanks
just
for having
talk
me.
About you.
Happy to be here and be talked about.
Yeah, and so for the listeners that haven't heard of you or listened to the couple episodes that you were on the Superflex Super Show, why don't you tell folks what you do?
Yeah, I am Tommy's wife. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's that, and a mom of a tiny human. So that's a lot of it. But professionally, I am a clinical psychologist. I trained for ever and ever and ever at Duke, and then opened a private practice. I work primarily with folks with trauma, some depression and anxiety. So that is my whole world.
Yeah, and I think we want to leverage a lot of that tonight, just because I don't really hear that anywhere in the fantasy football space. And so let's just have some fun, have some conversations, and we'll lean on you to provide some of the psychology context. And I think, just to kick it off, I want to get y'all's opinion on something, because I think I screwed up. I think I may have burned a bridge or several bridges.
Uh-oh.
In a dynasty.
Uh-oh.
Awesome.
Yeah. And so I know I'm not talking to thousands of people right now. This is just between the three of us. All right. Here's the deal. I am not a veto guy. However, a trade got vetoed in one of my leagues. Somebody sent, I think it was Baker Mayfield in the 109 or the 110. That's a rookie draft pick in the upcoming rookie draft for Joe Burrow. John, is that a fair trade to you?
Say it again.
The 109 and Baker Mayfield for Joe Burrow.
No, that's really not close, is it?
It's a bad trade, but it's not something that you would veto, is it? It doesn't feel like there's collusion there. It feels like there's a misevaluation of the market.
Yeah, okay. So my thing is, I just don't think that vetoes should exist.
Yep.
So that's the only reason I say no. But if they do exist, like, that's one of the cases where I would use it, honestly. Mm-hmm. And this is the thing that gets me, because that's all over, you know, Twitter has been saying for years, never veto, hashtag never veto. And that's, which, you know, ideally, yeah, you never have to do that. You do need some kind of recourse. And it's because of trades like this. Like, this is the part, they just never take the next step in the logic chain. When they start talking about this, they say, never veto. The end. It's like, okay, so, but what happens when Joe Burrow gets traded for nothing? You know,
yep.
There needs to be something that like, we need some type of mechanism. If it's not veto, it's got to be something. So, I assume I know where you're going with this, and I am thinking that I'm probably going to be on board.
Okay. So, Caitlin, for your context, if there's a trade that seriously imbalances the league in a very unfair way, or if there's collusion, if one manager is aiming to help another to their own detriment, the commissioner or the league can step in a lot of times and just say, like, hey guys, not fair, we're reversing this trade, like, as you were. that's what happened in this league. There was an outrage in the chat and it was reversed to sort of keep the peace. Now, I knew that Joe Burrow was on the block, even though he wasn't put on anyone's trade block. And so what I did was I offered Romeo Dubs the 102, the 209, I think the 210 and a third round pick, and it got accepted. So I took advantage, I think, of a manager who was clearly misevaluating Joe Burrow. And I feel like I still got a great deal in sending essentially the 102 away for Joe Burrow, a proven commodity, a quarterback with two top six hits on his resume, long-term contract, high passing volume offense, great weapons. And I feel like I got a great deal that snuck right under the threshold of a vetoable trade. John, did I do something wrong there?
No. No, this is something that we talked about a few weeks ago where, you know, it is kind of in everybody's best interest to make mutually beneficial trades. I guess I would say that. But I mean, you know, if Baker Mayfield plus, what is it? 108, 110,
109 or 110. Yeah.
Yeah. Like if that's going to get accepted, then you're kind of like, okay, well then this is definitely going to get accepted and this is better for the league than that crap that he was about to take, you know? Overall, I think it's fine. Probably could have been a little stronger, to be, you know, just to help get everybody's values calibrated. But like, again, like I don't want to assume it's a he, if they were going to make a trade, they were going to trade Joe Burrow. Like maybe Joe Burrow bullied this person in high school or something. I can't wait to get him off of my roster. He's an asshole. Then sure. Like, you know, a trade was going to get made. You might as well just, you know, come in at kind of the highest offer plus one basically and get it done.
Here's my concern. Not so much that this trade will get vetoed, because I think it's fair enough to not fall to that threshold. Mm-hmm. It's the outcomes afterward. I've pissed off somebody because I took Joe Burrow from them, right? Like that just happened. And then the league is already salty about an unfair deal. And I kind of manipulated the market, right? So I'm sure at least one or two other managers who are already a little raw from what just happened are going to look at me and be like, look at this asshole. You know, like he just came in and just gave just enough so that I can't veto this one as well. Have I hurt my trade market this non-point scoring season in this league?
I mean, probably a little. I think the bigger issue is, again, like you're kind of setting the market, you're kind of calibrating values a little bit, right?
Yep.
So, you know, I that might be the bigger issue is you've kind of established that a high-end quarterback like Joe Burrow can essentially be acquired for rookie pick 102. And, you know, so like if it does come to a point where you want to trade away a player, you've kind of set yourself up to not get as much in return. But beyond that, I can't imagine that more than one person, the person who you swooped in and undercut, like that's the only person I think really is affected to a point of not being willing to trade with you. That'd be my guess.
Okay. But, let's bring this to Caitlin.
Yes.
When there's a rupture in a group dynamic like this, and then only some repair, and then the potential for a second rupture on the same topic, the same sort of theme, how should that be navigated? And what are my potential outcomes here? I think you know just enough about how I play fantasy and fantasy football in general to know that I'm willing to live with this outcome.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm aware.
Yeah.
Okay, wait. No, I have many thoughts. None of them are going to answer your question.
Okay.
Well, maybe they will in a roundabout way. Honestly, I thought you were going to be way more of a dick than that was. Exactly what you think. I assumed you, like, we cannot control how other people value players. So there's the guilt and there's shame. The guilt is like, I did something wrong. I violated my own values. And that is implying that this person is somehow incompetent of making up their own mind, or they are not like knowingly going into that. Like, as John was saying, this could be for any number of reasons. This person is not the same value to this person as like objective value or your value. And so we make trades all the time. You make trades all the time where you might be like, ha ha, I want this quarterback, and I am willing to do a totally skewed trade that to anyone else would seem dumb or weird. But sure. For me, that makes sense. And so the whole point is like, we are all consenting adults. We are making these trades. And so I think from that dynamic alone, not taking the social dynamics, there's no foul play. That is like why this institution is there, to be like, that person clearly messed something up. But the fact that it happened again wasn't like a oopsies, I clicked the wrong button, my bad. It clearly was like, I am not valuing this in the same way as everybody else. And so you saw an opportunity, you took it, that is totally in line with what I know about the way you play. I don't know how it impacts like league dynamics, but I think on the level of an individual trade, we want to assume that the people we play with know the rules, know the value, have their own ways of evaluating, and we want to act accordingly. You see opportunities all the time and you take them. I don't see this as that different. The social impact, I do think, is a different thing. Like, if everybody is outraged about something, it is easy to become a villain, because we have this groupthink. Everyone is like, how dare? And then you have this objective judge, it seems. Well, some judge who came in and was like, that is bad. And then you kind of like snuck on in. And so it's easy for you to be lumped in with this like villain who tried to rob this person. So the perception thing to me feels different than, I did this action, should I feel bad about it?
Okay.
Does that make sense?
It totally does. John, have you ever been in a league where a trade has been vetoed?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, this is part of why we say no veto is never veto is people have, and I've seen this firsthand, people abuse it, you know? Mm-hmm. They don't veto a trade because it's objectively bad for the league. Sometimes they'll veto a trade if you let them. They'll veto a trade because it's bad for them. So they'll say, you know, I wanted that player. I wanted Joe Burrow. So I'm going to veto this bad trade and see if I can make a better trade. So which might have been what you did.
I didn't veto. I want to be totally clear. I did not veto the trade. I abstained because I knew what I was going to do. I wasn't going to be able to help myself. I was going to jump in and say, hey, Joe Burrow manager, like, here's some sweet, sweet draft pick capital for you. Why don't we work something out and ignore all these other bozos, you know?
Yeah. Like, has there been any backlash from your league yet?
All right, so that's the next thing.
Yes. They're going nuts.
I'm not going to go on there. I'm going to let this thing cool down for 24 hours. This happened right before we jumped on and recorded today. And I don't want to see the feedback, because when I get a trade rejection, I don't look at the comments. I usually don't have the chat turned on in my leagues. I don't want to communicate with people in a general sense, because I think only bad things can come from that, sort of a Lord of the Flies mentality. And so I'm imagining that there's going to be some snark, some angst, and maybe some harsh words for the fact that Joe Burrow has once again been dislodged from this team. But I don't really know yet.
So I think it also depends. Like, you are with these people forever, theoretically.
Theoretically,
right?
Yeah.
So like the relationship does matter. I think they're... In any family, there are these like things that happen where everybody talks about it for like a season or like a minute or however long your family gets mad, and then it blows over and somebody's outraged about the next thing. And so if it's something like that, then like, absolutely, mm-hmm. It's like, all right, well, somebody's going to talk about somebody and be mad about something. I can wait for this to blow over. If you're the type of family where people don't tend to talk about other people and this was like a particularly hot thing, then I think there is the potential for more damage of your reputation. But I think, and like this feels kind of icky to say because I love you dearly, but I think you have this privileged position in some leagues where you are a very strong team. And so you mm-hmm. know people are going to trade with you regardless. I think if you were like amongst the weakest and you really needed to leverage social relationships, that might be a different equation than like, hey, I know at some point somebody is going to want this player badly enough that they will trade with me. That's a different stance. And so the pros and cons are different from a very like calculating, this is a game way, you know?
Yeah. What were you going to say, John?
Oh man, so many thoughts off of that actually. Because you know, like you asked me if I've ever vetoed, if I've ever seen a league where there's been a veto, and like broadly, my answer is yes. But if you ask me for specifics, I can't remember them. You know, mm-hmm. Kind of to Caitlin's point, like that's the type of thing that blows over. Like even the really bad trades, still just kind of go away over time. It actually makes me think maybe there's some strategy here that we should consider at some point. As far as like, if you're going to make some bad trades, vetoable type of trades, do it in February, March.
Does it change at all that this is an orphan that I took over and I'm still developing relationships with these managers?
No, okay. I don't think so. But I'm curious. Caitlin might disagree.
I mean, like my entire job is like, wow, relationships are essential. And in an ideal world, you create a win-win where everybody feels good about giving you the things you want in a way that you call it manipulation, but also it's like a very clear, here's the benefit to everyone. If you are more new to a group, then in general, it would be less advisable to be like, hey, I'm going to take advantage of a situation and I'm going to get that reputation.
Yep.
Yeah. It does depend like how frequent that is. If that's just like a typical behavior, then you like, that would easily blow over. But if you are the only one who would do something like that and like everybody else is all like nicey nice, then yeah, that could be damaging.
Yeah, I think this is a blood in the water situation. And if we want to give me any positive spin, if we're going to politician this thing, I did help this manager save face. They got more from me than they got from the other guy. And Joe Burrow is still not on their roster, you know?
Yeah. It's so funny. You know, what I will say, this is kind of a dynasty fantasy football nuance thing. But you kind of walk into a situation like that with a certain amount of capital, you know, mm-hmm. Like taking over an orphan. First of all, you know, a lot of people are just kind of like, all right, like this is the reason that our league is able to continue because this guy was willing to take on this team that somebody else didn't want. So, yep. You know, like you kind of come in a little bit as a conquering hero, so you can kind of get away with more early on when you first take over an orphan than you could, you know, a little bit later. So I think it was an all right time to do it. I also, we might need to segue into another piece of this because you seem pretty insistent on the idea that you are the villain in this.
I want to close the loop. First of all, if I had been in this league last year, mm-hmm. I would have pried Joe Burrow long before he went for this as well. Oh, yeah. If that was really the market there, I would have found that value weakness and capitalized 9 months ago. You know, that's part of being a new orphan adopter is like the market isn't what you're used to by default because you weren't in it and you're changing the market by occupying one of 12 spaces. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I feel better about that. I appreciate that. That's therapy session number one.
All right. So what else did you do?
Well, I wanted to ask a follow-up question. John, does your strategy or your relationship with other managers change if you're in one league with an individual manager versus, let's say, five or six?
It can. I think that, like, if you demonstrate a, and it's weird because, like, strategy doesn't seem to affect people. Like, you know, quarterback extreme doesn't seem to affect somebody from one league to the next. Like, if they see me do it multiple times, they're kind of okay with it. They're less okay with it because I come on here and on a podcast and talk about how I'm doing this to beat them.
Yep.
That's the part that annoys them. But the strategy itself, they don't seem to be bothered by that. It's more about if you have kind of an extreme personality within the league, that's where it can start to affect you. Like there was a guy that I was in a league with many years ago. I was in two different leagues with him, and one league he did this thing. It was super obnoxious. He would send me a trade proposal and then send a follow-up email that was like multiple paragraphs long explaining why I should make this trade. I was like, that is one of the more detestable things you can do in this entire game to try and politic me like that. And then I ended up in a second league with him and just kind of blacklisted him right off the top. I'm like, I'm not trading with this guy. I know what it looks like.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Have you ever put bans on people for a period of time if they have egregious behavior?
Yeah, I'm not very good at sticking to it. I've tried. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. But people think that people do think that it's egregious when in a startup I take five plus quarterbacks, you know. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And they do that. They say, all right, I'm not trading with that guy. And I'm just kind of like, yeah, I've tried that before. I've tried to say I'm not going to trade with a particular person because I didn't approve of their actions. I didn't appreciate it. It's so hard to stick to that. And that's part of why the strategy is like, okay, like you can say that all you want. I'm going to make fun of you on Twitter. I'm going to say that, you know, talk about Superflex Bingo and how, all of this, your reaction to what I'm doing was so predictable. But the reason that I'm able to just kind of laugh it off is because I know that people cannot stick to these moratoriums that they try and impose.
Yep.
Tom can.
I've done it. I mean,
really?
It's not easy. I get that. What makes you like
write it down or anything? Or you have to?
No, I'm pretty good at holding to a vendetta.
Good to know.
I don't want to sound like a jerk. No, it's just like, it really sears in my brain. If you're a difficult person to trade with and we agree on a deal, let's say, and it's like, all right, we've hammered this thing out. You just need to drop a player to balance your roster. And then you don't go through with the deal. It's like, F you, man. Like that sticks with me. Why would I go through all of that effort again, especially if I'm in five leagues with you? I have no time for you. There's plenty of other folks that I can trade with. It's like you say, the names don't matter if you get the mix right.
Yeah.
It is this hilarious quirk of you, though, because like in almost every situation, you're like, if there is a tiny smidge of value gain, even if I love this person, like I'm going to take it because that's what you do. But you're like, no, but that person. They can offer me anything and I will not take it out of principle. It's like this interesting stubborn streak that is like nowhere else in your strategy that meshes.
This is really like, I don't want to say the downside, but this is the exposing part of having your wife on a fantasy football podcast.
Oh, is that a secret? My bad.
All right, Caitlin, I'm going to turn this back on you. What, in your mind, having never played fantasy football,
sure,
would make a good trade partner in a dynasty fantasy football league?
Respect, trust, reliability.
Expound.
I mean, like, yeah, generally what I would want in any sort of partnership where if you say you're going to do a thing, you follow through with it. So reliability, being able to know, like, in general, this person is good to their word. I think respect in the, like, I understand that they are an intellectual equal, or like able to, like, I don't feel bad trading with them because I think I'm taking advantage of them. I think, like, relatively, we are both trying to make a fair deal, but also, like, matching different values in a way. Like, if you really love quarterbacks and you know somebody undervalues them but loves, gosh, a wide receiver, a
running back, 102, a draft pick, yeah.
Then, like, that could be a really good partnership, especially across leagues. If you know, like, this tends to be something where it is equal, but we value things differently, and I can generally find gain and they can generally find gain. Like, again, if we can create a win-win where everybody leaves the trade happy, that is a good partnership to me. Whereas, like, we mesh well, both of our needs are met. Nobody is resentful. Nobody is like, oh, you screwed me over, but I had to, because, like, that feels icky, you know?
Yeah. Let's turn this to you, John. How are you as a trade partner? Being as objective as you can.
I think that in terms of constructing a trade, I think I do all that. I think that, I do kind of think in terms of, what makes the most sense here. It's less about winning the trade. If I'm getting the players that I believe in, then, you know, I don't need to win the value piece of it. You know, I don't need to win the trade calculator. I'm really bad at responding to trades, though. I think you've this could be either a podcast episode or maybe just an offline session with Caitlin. Why it is that I have such a hard time responding to a trade. If I don't feel confident in it, why I have such a hard time just rejecting it or sending a counter offer. I've done this to Tommy. But you know, I get a trade that's like, yeah, that's decent. I don't know that I want to do it. It's certainly not something that excites me to a point of, all right, done. Let's just, you know, no negotiating. I'm just taking that. That's a good deal. And I just, like, the rationalization is, all right, I got to think about this. I got to, you know, I'm going to spend the weekend kind of mulling this over. And then I just never end up responding to it. And there's definitely some psychology behind that. I guarantee it. What it is, I have no idea.
Yeah, I mean, like, that is so relatable, right? Like, when we get an email and we're like, I'm going to have to think to be able to interact with this, and we put a little star on it and we're like, we're totally going to come back to it, and we deal with all the easy things that are like, yes, no, yes, no. Or like, you match with someone on a dating site and you're like, well, I'm not pumped about this, and you just kind of like watch the thing expire and you're like, well, that decided it for me, you know? Like, I think, like, that is just like such a common thing where, if you're not sure, rather than having to deal with it in the moment, we're like, at some point clarity will come to me. When in reality, if you already know, then it's conflict aversion, where it's just like, I know I need to say no, but I don't want to, because that's going to be uncomfortable and they might not like me. And in that case, like, that's part of the game, where it's just like, the quicker you say no, the quicker they can actually move on to trading with somebody else. It is a kindness in this context to be like, hey, appreciate the offer, no thank you. But if you really don't know, there's that like, at what point do we circle back? And having to actually set a time where you're like, all right, I need to like weigh out some pros and cons. I need to think about this rather than letting the proverbial clock expire.
Yeah.
So yeah. Normal though, like totally. Such a part of human psychology.
For totally. Sure. Yeah. Like it kind of becomes a question of, you know, the old saying, if it's not hell yes, then it's a no. like, is it valuable? Is it more valuable to live by that? Or is it more valuable to act like, I mean, it's a no, but like, I'm going to act like this was, it was thought provoking enough that I need the weekend to sort through this. Like,
That's a great question. Cause if it is, if you want to encourage more trades like that, then yes, it might actually behoove you to like take some time and be like, hey, this is a really good thing. Let me think about it. If you know it's a no and you do not want those offers in the future, then acting as though it's like a really good offer you need to think about will make them think, okay, I'm close. I'm just not quite there. So they'll keep trying over and over again, being like, well, last time they spent 72 hours thinking about it. So like, I must have been this far off. And so it depends on the messaging you want to send. If you really want to say like, no, you were close, then maybe if it's really like, never send me that again, you should probably just cut ties.
I've sent some of those to you, John. And you've let a few linger and it's created a bit of a chasing opportunity to the point where I send you an offer that is a hell yes. You know, I've overpaid to get Trevor Lawrence on my team from you. I gave you, I think it was Kyler Murray and Kirk Cousins. That feels imbalanced to me. I mean, in the moment it felt imbalanced, but I chased because you were letting trades linger and it's like, screw this. I am done waiting 72 hours. If I'm on the dating app, like I want to find a way to get the yes so that I could have coffee with Trevor Lawrence, you know?
That's true. I just wonder how many people I feel like this is rhetorical because I think I know the answer to this. The answer is one person views it that way.
Yeah.
When, you know, if I'm not responding right away, you're probably the only person on earth who's going to say, oh, like that just means that I'm close and I need to just add a little bit to this, just, you know, push a little bit harder and I can get there. Most people are going to be like, man, screw this guy. Like, he just, is he in this league or what? Is this a real person or, you know, is this just AI or something?
So, all right. I want to ask a follow-up then. So, you get trades done theoretically. Is mm-hmm. there a type of manager or a type of trade proposal that is more often than not the type of deal that gets done? You know, is there a theme there for accepted trades?
Oh, man. I mean, anybody who, you know, people who pay attention to, you know, the thing is my league mates do have the benefit here of, you know, you want to know how I feel about certain players, listen to the podcast for a minute, you know, you want to know how I build a team, listen to the podcast. We don't always have that benefit with people. So it's always strange to me when people don't take advantage of that. And then I'm getting offers of, you know, a wide receiver for one of my quarterbacks.
Lamar Jackson.
Yeah. That one I might actually do, but but yeah, when it's here's Jamar Chase for Joe Burrow,
yeah,
and I'm just like in what reality would I ever do that? I dislike wide receivers. I think that they're all just kind of replacement level. I think that quarterbacks are supremely valuable. So, and like, I've very publicly, very clearly stated this for years now that I feel this way. So yeah, like there was no chance I was going to take that trade, but you know, when it's this is kind of one of your strengths, Tommy, is, understanding how people, view their own rosters and how they approach their own rosters. Like, you spend a lot more time thinking about that and researching that than, I mean, anyone else does, to a point where I don't think we could teach it. Like, I don't think we could ask anybody to do this, but man, it's super, super useful. And it's easy to trade with somebody who's thinking to themselves, all right, I know that he is really into quarterbacks. And so, you know, and he also undervalues his wide receivers. So one thing I could potentially do here is, you know, give him two quarterbacks, get back the quarterback that I want, and, you know, maybe one of his wide receivers he doesn't care about, something like that, you know?
Yeah.
That's the type of trade partner that that I feel like I can work with pretty easily, is somebody who just kind of starts with, all right, like, is this offer going to make sense to this individual?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like, just start with that. Like, don't, the problem is most people just go shopping, you know, they look at your roster, they decide what they want. And then they decide what they want to pay for it. And that's the offer you get. And that's where they don't get a response.
One of the more profound things you've ever told me is that your league mates don't exist for your pleasure. They're also trying to play fantasy football, and they're trying to construct teams in ways that make sense to them. And you should treat them as such.
Yeah, we talk about it all the time in interpersonal effectiveness. Like, we want to reinforce in a way that is personalized. And so if I'm asking you to watch Marika for a while.
That's our child.
That's our child. Marika. Yeah. then like, there are so many ways that it could be like, hey, I would be so grateful. And that might be really meaningful to someone. Or like, hey, if you do that, I will take her away for a weekend so you can be solo, and that might be meaningful for some people. Or like, I will cook all the dinners for a week. And it's totally different. What might be really effective for one person is just not for another. And so you need to know your audience. And in all interpersonal situations, when you want to create this dynamic where everyone leaves happy, you want to know, like, what is it that will hook them? And I assumed everyone did as much market research as you do, because that is very time consuming and very hard, but also a really effective way of knowing, like, what is it that they value? And we know, like, we can be so much more effective asking someone we know and love for something than a stranger, because we know exactly what it is, where it's like, hey, I know that you could really use 30 minutes of solo time in the morning. I am willing to do that for a week and take her for the first 30 minutes if you are willing to do this for me. I can tailor it in a way where if you were not somebody that I knew and loved, then it would be much harder to figure out, like, what is the thing that would get you to want to give me this thing that I'm asking for.
Yeah. A lot of these analytical processes, though, the work is on the front end. It doesn't matter how many leagues you're in. If you're in two leagues, the work is almost the same as if you're in a dozen or 30 leagues. Yes, you have to learn other managers, but it's pretty modular at a certain point. So it's not like I'm learning the deepest, darkest secrets of every manager. I'm just taking their tendencies and scaling them as easily and efficiently as I can. Let's transition, though. I want to talk about Justin Fields, John. We haven't had a chance to talk about Justin Fields. It kind of reminds me, I don't want to cause any pain to you today, but it reminds me of Zach Wilson a little bit. You know, there was this high value. There were believers, you being a believer, right? You were a Zach Wilson believer, weren't you?
Yeah, stop saying it, but yeah.
Sorry, I just keep doing the next
one. That was one of my bigger misses. Andrew Locke, if we want to talk about that too, because there's some similarities there too.
So, Caitlin, I'm going to give you a little context. There was a really highly drafted quarterback who was really good for fantasy, but kind of questionable in the NFL. His name is Justin Fields. He had like all the physical tools. When you see him throw a football, it's beautiful, like really tight spirals. He runs faster than everyone else. Not only that, in our game in fantasy football, he scores like a shitload of points. Problem is, he's not a great NFL quarterback. He doesn't do the other things super well, at least at this point in his career. And the NFL seems to be giving up on him. right? So all these other quarterbacks, Drew Lock included, are signing or being traded to these different teams in free agency. It's like this melee of like musical chairs. But Justin Fields, as of this recording, doesn't have a chair yet. So he is going from, gosh, what was he worth 3 weeks ago, John? More than two firsts, something in that range?
I think by then people were pretty on board with Caleb Williams being a better prospect. So I think people were probably on Jaden Daniels, in fact, maybe even Drake May. I don't know. I think it's been pretty diminished. But, you know, a year ago, he was going in the middle of the first round of startups.
Yeah, which is incredibly valuable. Like, he was going around, like, not that far off from Patrick Mahomes last year, who had a bit of a dip of his own. Yeah. But right now, his value has plummeted. I want to talk about the psychology of the manager holding Justin Fields right now. This asset that used to be worth $100 and now is worth like $15. I've tried to send offers out for Justin Fields because the price, in theory, on Twitter, if you send out a poll, has dropped to that point. But I can't pull Justin Fields away from any of these managers anywhere near that. I've had counters of two firsts right now. And it's like, I can't pay you anywhere near that. That's not where we're at in the common market value. And so I just want to talk about the psychology of holding on to these precipitous falling assets. Is that enough to get you started?
Yeah, it's some cost fallacy. Totally. So like when we put a lot of effort or time or money into something, we tend to be like, no, but I did so much, so I can't possibly give up now. Mm-hmm. It reminds me of like Beanie Babies back in the day, where it's like, no, if we buy them now and we just hold on to them and they like went up in value and then they started going down, and it's like, no, but in like 100 years, they're going to be back again. And so everybody stored these Beanie Babies in their stupid boxes forever. And it was done, you know. We had to call it. We missed the window, but a lot of people still have Beanie Babies in their attic. And so it is like a totally normal thing. Like if I have tried and tried and tried for a thing, it feels as though continuing to keep trying is better, because otherwise we have to acknowledge we wasted all of that effort. We wasted whatever we traded them for. And that is a really hard thing to tolerate, this sense of like regret or I wish I had known this, or I should have known this. And so it's pretty common for people to double down or be unwilling to be like, well, I paid $100 for this and I understand it's now 10, but I want 100 because that's what I paid. Like, I think we've all experienced that, and yet that is not effective. It also depends. Like, I don't know enough context to know if this is like a dip where actually you should want this person and you wait for them to increase in value again and it will stabilize, or whether it's like, no, really, they're like pretty knocked out right now, so you should probably give up. I think like what is effective depends on how likely it is that like he will get chosen by someone and then it'll stabilize and he'll go back to like a asset.
What are your thoughts, John? Do you think that Justin Fields is going to have that rebound moment? Where are you at with him?
I actually do, but yeah, I mean, the problem is people are going to miss on a lot of opportunities to unclog their rosters by hanging on too long. But, you know, I see Trey Lance, I see Jake Browning, kind of, you know, these like Justin Fields is an NFL starting quarterback. It's just, and I mean, we're in a world right now where Sam Darnold has a starting job. Jacoby Brissett currently has a starting job. It's like, you can't tell me that those guys are better than Justin Fields. You know? So like, that's kind of the story that I tell myself with guys like this. And it's like, eventually he ends up back in a starting role, kind of like, you know, Marcus Mariota did this at one point. Sam Darnold, back to him. I mean, he's been a backup for several years. He ends up back in a starting role. Like, this happens where they just kind of, I mean, Mitchell Trubisky took a year in Buffalo and then ends up as a starter in Pittsburgh. You know, like he ends up back in a starting role at some point. The problem is, you know, kind of to Kalen's point, what a lot of people are going to end up doing here is sticking with him until that moment. And then that moment when that window reopens, they're going to feel so committed because they've been waiting literal years for this moment that they're going to miss it. The window's going to slam shut on them again because, you know, they allowed themselves to get way too invested. Like that's how this is going to ultimately turn out.
But also it's tough. Like I was just re-upping some retirement thing and there were a bunch of questions about risk and it was like, all right, your stock plummets. What do we do? And the options were like, sell all of it, sell part of it, sell none of it. And I was like, okay. So like, I am a psychologist and I need so much more context. How could I possibly answer that question? And I think like some of it does come down to risk tolerance where it's like, okay, how much am I willing to ride this out knowing he might not raise in value again, but he might, like, how much do I want to sell now accepting a loss to buy somebody else who could score me points now versus like playing a longer game? And there is no right or wrong. It depends like who else is on your team. Like what are your goals? Are you trying to win right now versus like build up a team over the next 5 years? And so I think like all of those things need to come into play when you're making those decisions. And there are some times where it's just like, well, we don't know. We do not have enough information to be able to predict the future in a way we want to. And that uncertainty sucks. And then people tend to fall back on their habitual patterns when faced with this like anxiety provoking, I don't know. And so if somebody's more conservative, it's like, oh, get rid of him. Everything is uncertain. We better get rid of. And then like other people are more like, well, you know, I have hung on so tightly that I must hang on more.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Where's the lesson learned here, John? Should the managers just not have held on this long? Should they just be more eyes wide open about risk tolerance? What actionably can the Super Friends take from Justin Fields right now?
I think there are kind of a few things in actually at the end of this, I'm going to have a question for Kalen that I think kind of plays into the actionability here. But so first of all, the big thing, and we've talked about this kind of a lot lately, particularly, you know, talking about startups, developing amnesia for what you paid to get X player, because there is a fallacy, particularly with startups, any kind of draft, people talk about, oh, I can't trade him for that. He was my first round pick. It's like, okay, but he's not a first round pick anymore. He was last year. He was your first round pick. A year later with a ton of more information, that doesn't exist anymore. So all you're doing is you're just allowing him to continue to devalue on your roster by continuing to, you know, to assume that he's going to get back to that, or even that he's still at that first round value just because he was once upon a time, you know. I think that's kind of the big thing. I mean, you know, we could probably point to some of the stuff that we saw over the course of the season, and we should really kind of be saying he won what, 3 games, 5 games over the course of like 3 years.
Yeah.
That's not the type of thing that NFL teams are going to be okay with. And we probably should have said, all right, yeah, he's fun for fantasy. He scores a ton of points. He runs really well. He has some monster games here and there. But none of that matters nearly as much as the fact that the Chicago Bears are worse now than they were when they drafted him. So, you know, maybe we need to consider the possibility here that they're going to move on from him and try and find someone who can win, you know, more than a couple games in a season. Hashtag QB wins, not really a thing. But for NFL purposes, they think about that. They look at that and they say, his skill set is not the type that wins you football games. And eventually, you know, in order for people to keep their jobs, they need to find somebody who can do that. So, you know, yeah, there probably were some indicators that we could have caught on to sooner. But I mean, it still kind of comes back to, we ignored those indicators because of that sunk cost fallacy. You know, we continued to tell ourselves a story that this is, he's going to continue to be an NFL starter because look at how many fantasy points he scored. Look at how, you know, what we paid to get him over the course of the last year. Like, these are all things that aren't going to go away. So, and it's like, they absolutely could. They absolutely should. The one other thing I would say, I think, this is the really tough part. And this is where there's a question in here, Caitlin. I promise you that. I don't know for sure, when or how it's going to come out, but there's also, I mean, there's very public failure all around this game. Like, there's a lot about this game that can make us look pretty foolish. And, you know, sometimes I think that people would rather, you know, in a case like Justin Fields, I think people would rather kind of stick with him and ultimately, you know, maybe at some point they look good by having him on their roster. It also just kind of, it's just easier to deal with the failure of, oh, I was aggressive about acquiring this player and I got that wrong. It's easier to say that than to say, I got rid of him too early and I got that wrong, you know? So like the kind of the truly aggressive move is scary, because of the way it can look to the rest of our league, to the people on Twitter, when somebody puts up a trade poll and we get absolutely smoked in it, like whatever it is, they have a lot of ways to judge us. And I think that probably compels a lot of dynasty players, that fear of judgment, that fear of being overly aggressive and publicly getting it wrong. And, you know, furthermore, I think that, you know, that extends to, sometimes it can certainly extend to, you know, proposing trades. I think that a lot of people probably hold back on proposing trades because they're worried about getting it wrong publicly. Yeah. I think that, and you know, I'm kind of speaking from firsthand experience here because I'm doing a startup auction right now, and it gets really difficult for me to aggressively and confidently make some of the bids that I want to make because, you know, for instance, Saquon Barkley was going for like 10% of the starting budget, and Breece Hall was going for about 11%, something like that. And so, you know, so we kind of let Breece Hall be the kind of the measuring stick of how we're going to value running backs. And so Saquon Barkley went for 10%. And then we get some more running backs on the board who are not as good, and they start going for 13, 14%, 15% of the budget. And now whoever got Saquon Barkley got him cheap relatively. And so now, getting one of those other running backs, as a scarcity kind of sets in, you know, having to pay more to get them all of a sudden feels like we're being stupid, you know, like, why didn't I just pay for Saquon Barkley when I could have, you know, instead of spending this much for Josh Jacobs? The names don't really matter. Kind of the point being that, there's so many opportunities for you to look bad in front of a bunch of people that you really don't want to look bad in front of. And I'm wondering, to finally get to the question here, and I'm sure you've got more thoughts than just this at this point, so feel free, please. But I'm wondering if there's some type of mechanism that you deal with frequently that kind of helps overcome that. Whether, you know, I've heard about there's this like very holistic idea of I think it's called tulpas, which is basically just kind of like an alter ego, essentially. And that's kind of what I do, you know, for the podcast, for instance. Like, I'm a very introverted person. I'm typically a pretty quiet person. I have a lot to say when it comes to fantasy football, but I have to overcome my nature in order to do that. So it's almost like I turn into this like superhero version of myself who likes to podcast. Like, his superpower is podcasting and talking about fantasy football. But I wonder if there are other types of mechanisms that kind of help, you know, help to develop the confidence or help just bring out that confidence side when it comes to making some of these moves.
I do have a lot of thoughts. It's such a great question. And like, in fact, you are a therapy role model, right? So what you're talking about is shame.
Nice.
Where it is the emotion that is elicited. It's a very social emotion when we fear that we're going to be rejected by a community or people who are important to us. And it's an important signal, because if we're running around being like, I'm just going to wear no clothes all the time, people are going to judge us and they are going to reject us and be like, you can't do that, man. Like, that's not cool. And so we get this feedback and it's like, oh, okay. Even if I want to be naked all the time, I got to wear clothes when I go to work. And like, we learn and we evolve to be able to not be rejected. But there's so many times where we're not actually going to be rejected. We're just so afraid of it. So there are times where it's like, if I tell them, like, hey, do you want to be my friend? We're so worried. They're going to be like, ew, why would I want to be friends with you? You're disgusting. When in reality, nobody's going to do that. And so I think it's a different universe, right? Like, we have Twitter, we have all of these platforms where people truly can be horrible. And so I think there's a difference between like, what are things that are going to genuinely get us ostracized? If you become known for making horrible decisions, that legitimately might impact how people view you, the credibility of your podcast. But if you're sending things that are reasonable, that like maybe you missed fields, you mm-hmm. know, like things that lots and lots of people have done that you're like, ooh, I wish I weren't one of them, but I like totally get and wouldn't reject anybody for making similar decisions. Those are the things where the shame doesn't actually fit. People aren't going to be like, ha ha, you're a monster. And even if they are, it'll pass within a moment. Your actual reputation, your actual credibility won't be challenged. And so the actual skill is when shame is not helpful to act on, when it's hindering you from getting trades done, from being able to podcast, from being able to go and make friends, you want to practice opposite action, which is noticing your urge. With shame is to withdraw, hide, isolate, don't do the thing. Just go into your corner and pretend you don't exist. The opposite action is like approaching. So you're like, oh, what if they judge me if I make that trade? It's like, make it over and over and over again. And that's the only way your brain learns. People don't actually shamelessly mock you. If they do, that's different. And that's a different set of coping skills. I am not in a context in which that ever happens, where people legitimately are like, you're a moron, you suck. And so for me, it's much easier to say like, yeah, go for it, do it. I think in general, even if it is that people are going to make fun of you, if it's still in line with your values and the person you want to be, and you could look at yourself in the mirror and say like, no, that was the person I want to be. It still is helpful to practice doing it over and over and over again and learning you survive. They might have been like, ha ha ha, you suck, but you got a better offer. You got the trade done. You got the thing you wanted. And so it's a matter of like, how do I tolerate that icky feeling when people are mean? Because they can be, especially when anonymous on the internet. But you're doing it. It's like, put on my superhero cape, just pretend that I'm really confident that I've got this and do it. And over time, you actually do become more confident. You become more competent. And so it builds and builds until it doesn't feel as fake as it might have your first episode.
Yeah, we're at 275 in at this point. So I think you're doing the superhero thing pretty well.
And I this is way back now, but to circle back to Fields.
Oh, yeah.
John, I think that was an incredible point. It is basically reality acceptance, where it's like, not where I wanted things to be, where I imagined them to be. What is the situation now? And would I actually make that trade if I like didn't already have them? So like, if somebody just offered this, you would, Tommy, you would probably take it because you're like, yeah, they're undervalued right now. Let's take some Justin Fields.
I'm trying to, yeah.
For other people, that's not how they play. It's like, let's look for the stars who are going to score a lot of points right now. Let's not get them when they're undervalued. And so if you would not in a vacuum take that, then like that probably is a signal that it's time to let go. Or it's just like, it's kind of like when you're in a relationship and you're like, well, I really loved them once. And it's like, wait, that's not a reason to stay in a relationship. Do you love them now? Do you want to be with them? If the answer is no, then it might be time to like let go of this image that you used to have and accept like what is right in front of you.
Mm-hmm. One guy that I do love is Anthony Richardson. And I have genuine concern that I am going to fall into a very similar trap of Justin Fields' managers. And so I don't think that story is written. I think it's equally likely he turns out to be Cam Newton as he does to be Justin Fields. But I'm going to try to be really cognizant of tracking those markers that we should have been. And I think you and I were to some degree, John, we were out on Justin Fields pretty early and we had concerns and we voiced those concerns. But very similar profile in Anthony Richardson.
To hold the other side, knowing nothing about fantasy football whatsoever, if he does...
What if he's awesome?
Okay,
yeah.
I'm going to act opposite to Shane right now. I'm going to do that thing we were just talking about. So like, even if he is chosen to a really bad team, if the whole thing is he can be pretty bad, but he runs a lot and that makes a lot of points, even if he's on a really bad team, as long as he is somewhere, you could still score a lot of points.
Yeah.
Even if it's in like whatever team has a bad thing.
QB go vroom. Yeah. It's won a lot of championships.
So that knowing nothing about it is my 2 cents on that.
Yeah,
that's kind of the, in fact, that's probably the best case scenario. There are a lot of things that are really kind of backwards in dynasty football, Caitlin. Like kind of the best case scenario for Justin Fields would be that he ends up on a team where they have nothing but Justin Fields. And, you know, just let him go do his thing because we don't have anything else going for us. So the other thing that that's very backwards is that kind of that fear of rejection that we have. It's less about rejection and it's more about like the guy in Tommy's league who just traded away Joe Burrow. He makes a couple more trades like that, he's going to get absolutely flooded with trade proposals. That's almost worse. Like we'd almost rather just be shunned by the entire league because we never trade than just be getting a ton of trade proposals because we always make trades that benefit the other person and just kind of, you know, to our own detriment. So
the worst feeling in the world is when you get a trade offer in your inbox and you see someone else is trying to send you their first plus something else for your first straight up.
Yes.
It's like, oh, I'm the fish, aren't I? You're just trying to take my one-on-one. You think I'm the worst manager in the league.
Yeah, maybe that's an action item too. Do that before they can do it to you. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. We've been going for an hour, and this was really meant to be a bonus episode. John, do you have any closing thoughts?
No, I don't think we covered a lot of ground. It's always fun. Like this, I've told you guys before, I might have even said this on air, but the stuff with you, Caitlin, is always like that stuff that I nerd out on almost as much as I nerd out on fantasy football. Mm-hmm. So like, these are always fun episodes for me. I hope that I'm asking questions that are pertinent to other people, to some of our super friends who are listening. But even if it's not, even if it's self-serving, it's a huge help for me. It sucks if people are just kind of listening to me better myself, but
I love it.
That's all that matters. And like Tommy said, it's not that thousands of people are listening. It's that Tommy's just sitting here listening to you diagnose me.
You're doing great.
Also, I'm a therapist. What did you say it was? The ideal therapy patient. Is that what you said earlier? Something mm-hmm. like that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which I don't know. Maybe compliment, maybe not. I don't know if the super friends are gonna maybe that hurts my credibility, but
no.
whatever. It's
important. Well, but you'd be an awesome human, so
whoever's listening to a Dynasty podcast in mid-March, like they're in it to listen to you, John. Let's be honest. All right. What do you say we wrap this one up, man? I do want to extend the gratitude to Caitlin.
Yeah, I think
it'd be great if we could have you on one more time this non-point scoring season, if we can fit it in, just because, I learn a lot and I love what we talk about. I mean, we mentioned a handful of player names, but I think it's a really engaging conversation and I don't know anybody else talking about this kind of stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. At least one more time, because there's the psychology behind the rookie draft. There's a psychology, you know, behind the final push before the season. So, plenty of stuff to talk about.
Thanks for having me. Happy to come back anytime.
Nice. Right on. Let's wrap this one up for the week. And as we do that, ask you for a quick favor. If you haven't already, subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also subscribe to the DLF Family of Podcasts mega feed and get access to all the great podcasts from DynastyLeagueFootball.com. Once you've subscribed to the Super Show, if you do us a huge favor, rate and review the podcast. Helps us to get out to more people, involve more people in the conversation. And from there, we can really zero in on the topics that are the most useful to you, our super friends. You can get at us on Twitter. He's at FFTommyB. I'm at SuperflexDude. Caitlin Fang is there too, kind of, but I don't think we're giving out that handle.
She's in it so that she can register for Scott Fishbowl. That's it.
And it's like Taylor Swift, you, and Tommy. Those are my three friends.
Yeah. Let's get Caitlin into Scott Fishbowl this year, by the way.
Oh, it's so bad.
Oh, that'd be awesome. Yeah, we can do it. We can make that happen for sure. And then Taylor Swift, Kate Middleton, Golden Bachelor, stuff like that.
Yes. So,
perfect.
Speaking my language.
But you don't get to know her Twitter handle, but Tommy's at FFTommyB and I'm at SuperflexDude. This episode was dedicated in loving memory to James the Brain Katulis. Thank you to DynastyLeagueFootball.com for the platform. Thank you to Heart and Soul Radio for the music. Thank you to Dr. Caitlin Fang for joining us. And above all else, thank you for listening. And until next week, stay sexy and super flexy.